Mr. King, reel 11. Which division were you in, Mr. King?
46th.
Do you remember the brigade?
I can't remember the brigade. I remember the flashes, the Oakley flash, you know, the grain train, the Oakley flash on the battle dress. I can't remember the div. Might have been 139 brigade or something like that. I'm not quite sure.
When you arrived in the line, you said that there was a railway line and then a tunnel.
Yeah.
And your headquarters, I think, were in the tunnel.
Yeah, there was the HQ was in the tunnel, yeah.
And the Germans at the other end, so there must have been a kind of a block between the pair of you.
Yeah.
Between the two sides.
That's right, yeah.
Can you...
Well, I don't think one ventured into the middle.
Can you describe to me the terrain as it was at that time when you first arrived there?
Very scrubby. You know, a lot of scrub and sort of low cactus and... It wasn't altogether sandy as I'd expected, you know, when we were going there, we thought we were going out to pure sand dunes, you know, but certainly it was much more rocky than I expected. And a lot of low scrub and sort of very, very infertile. You know, the whole area seemed as if it wouldn't sustain, didn't sustain any crops, or we never saw any crops or anybody... tilling doing any farming work or any agricultural work at all. In fact, I always used to say the natives used to come up out of the ground like ghosts, and they all were selling bloody eggs. Everybody seemed to sell eggs, and where the hell the hens came from, I don't know. They used to say they were crocodile eggs or something like that, because nobody saw any hens. I never saw any hens anyway. But there was no record, you know, he didn't say any. Well, not that we saw any much into any village. There was no villages or anything as we knew them. You know, where we were anyway, it was all just sort of barren, you know, all just barren hillsides, you know, where we were. So there wasn't a lot of, you know, you couldn't say anybody, as I say, tilling the ground or anything.
Green and Baldy Hills, where were they in relation to the railway line and the tunnel?
Well, they were two big features, in fact. Green Hill, if I recall, was on the left and Bald Hill was on the right. And they seemed really massive, you know, as opposed to the other areas. You know, they did seem to be very tall features, in fact, you know. And in fact, we seemed to, at one time, we seemed to be going up Bald Hill or Grain Hill. And if I remember, we had a hell of an issue with some Americans. It's all a bit hazy now, of course, but we seemed to put these Americans on top of this Grain Hill. And before we knew where we were, the tanks were coming back through where we were. And they'd gone, and then we went back up and took it again. So it was a bit confusing at the time.
Very steep hills, were they?
No, not especially, but they didn't seem to have much evidence scaling and getting up, actually. Just sort of long, steady slopes, if I remember rightly.
And you were dug in on
we were dug
the lower slopes?
Sort of the reverse slopes of this adjacent to Grain Hill and Bald Hill.
Do you recall the dispositions of the battalion on the hill when you initially got there and dug in?
I think the company was forward. I think the NB company were forward, and C and D were in the back. I'm almost sure that the NB were forward.
And you changed places.
Changed places. But we didn't seem to do a great lot of changing about. We seemed to be fairly static where we were anyway, on this one hill, on this one feature. We didn't seem to be continually changing positions. We seem to be in a fairly static role, actually, where we were.
Had the Germans good observation of your position?
Oh, yeah. That's one thing that they had, I thought. Really good observations. You know, at times you don't move. You know, you're always getting... if there was any sort of untoward movement, you know what I mean? Certainly, there was a few shells that used to come lobbing over. But it could appear they had really good observation points.
How far away were the German positions from your own front line?
Well, in the tunnel, they wouldn't be very far. Maybe when we did that patrol, as I was telling you about, we did a big fighting patrol. We seemed to be going maybe about half an hour before we met any Germans. And we seemed to be going forward all the time. You know, we weren't deviating much. Went along this sort of hillside, you know, along the side of this hill, until we got to the German area. I would imagine about a quarter of a mile, something like that, you know, maybe.
What was the communications, or the lines of communications, you know, between the companies and the battalion?
Oh, mostly for telephone.
They didn't have radio or
oh, they had
to any degree?
Well, mostly between the companies was a paid telephone, but I would imagine between the company HQs and battalion HQs was the radio, but they were a big heavy, you know, fellow wanted to be like a mule to carry them about, you know, they were being heavy backpacks, you know, very heavy things, you know. Certainly you wanted this, you know, a fairly strong fellow to be able to hold them about, you know.
Do you remember who was commanding the battalion at this time?
Yes, I think it was Colonel Ware who was the commanding officer at that time.
What was he like?
Well, I can't remember seeing a great deal of him, actually. He didn't seem to be... wandering around a great deal, as between companies. The CEO was always somebody that was, you know, somebody that you didn't see very much at. At least I can recall seeing a great deal of him. You didn't see many sort of visits from the CEO around the companies. At least I can recall a great deal of visitations.
Would you have expected to see more of your CO?
Yeah, well, I would have thought, yes, sir. I would have certainly thought so, yes. But, as I say, we didn't seem to get many visits. Of course, it's still a long time ago. And
Was he an elderly person? Or?
Yeah, he seemed if I remember, he had a fairly heavy moustache. Rather a stocky fella. But... that was about as much as I knew about him, to be honest.
You were in the position, as you've indicated, quite a while, being in a static, relatively quiet role. What are your memories of what was occurring leading up to the battle itself at Sedgenane?
Well, we were always sort of sending patrols out, probing their defences, I suppose. In the expectation that one day we would be, you know, we would try and oust them from their positions. You know, I would imagine that would be the forward planning as far as we were concerned. It was a sort of just a containment exercise. I think we were expecting that, and I think a lot maybe depended on the attitude or the actions of the Air Army, I suppose, you know, what was going to happen if they shoved them up our way, sort of stuff. You know, eventually that's what happened, of course. It was then just a matter of, in one sense, containment, because nobody knew what you know, I suppose what they were going to do next. And of course that proved itself when they broke out, you know, and we had to force march back, you know, up towards Sentinel, you know.
Were you briefed prior to the battle, as, you know, told what was expected of you and where?
Not a great day, no, because all the, as I recall, we were forced marching back towards Sedgemoor. And to be honest, as far as I was concerned, I was platoon sergeant, we just knew that the Germans had, we just heard rumours that the Germans had broken through the French up at two, you know, further back. And that we had to go back and try and keep them in. It broke them through, and that was it. And we forced marched back, I remember.
What kind of distance would this be?
It seemed a pretty long route. I would think it would be about 10 miles, I would imagine.
And when you say forced march as a light infantry regiment, is that getting a lot of it?
Yeah, we doubled back and then marched, and doubled and marched, and doubled and marched. Now remember, when we got near the battle, we were supposed to be, we were told that we were going across the start line at dawn, and we were about 2 hours late. It was brilliant daylight, and of course we still went, naturally, we still went, you know, over the start line.
What date did this occur?
I think it was in March.
Well, you double back, what did you do then when you reached start line?
We were told that the Germans were up on this crest. As I say, there wasn't a great deal of briefing at all. Because I think, you know, it was being done in such a very hurry, I think, the Germans had broken through. And, you know, I think we were just sort of shoved in to try and stop the gap. And
what happened to your company commanders and the battalion commander at this time?
I think they had got off on a recce. Quite, you know, before we got there, they had gone off on a recce just to find out just what the lay of the land was. And I think it was in that much of a hurry, they had hardly got back to brief us before we were almost there and ready to go. So I think that the communications, well, not the communications, because no doubt they would want to tell us as much as they could, but certainly I got the impression that they had gone in ahead, they were just sort of wrecking the ground, and it was all done in that much of a hurry that they couldn't tell us a great deal about what was happening. Maybe they didn't know themselves, to be honest.
Did the seconds in command take charge in effect while they were away?
Well, that was the normal procedure, of course, that the second in command took it. But I think at that time the CO was away, he was away at the time somewhere anyway, and the second in command of the battalion had taken over.
Who was it?
Oh, so many really names. I can't even remember.
So you're leading into this attack, and the Germans were up on this ridge, I think you said.
We were simply told that the Germans were up on this ridge. And I always remember we filed past this point, and we got a tin of corned beef and a pack of biscuits. And what was ludicrous about it, afterwards, of course, when we opened the biscuits, they all had a flap round, a present from Breezy Blackpool, which seemed rather funny like at that time, because the biscuits were as hard as bloody bell metal. And anyway, we got this, and all the instructions that we had was to get the men spread out, you know, carrying right, you know, the normal tactic was carrying the rifles at the high port, maybe about 4 or 5 yards between the men, and to advance up this hill. And we went up this hill.
Was this one of the Baldy or Green Hill, was it, you were attacking up?
Yeah. This was the big, maybe Sedgemoor. Anyway, we went up this bloody hill, And there wasn't, never heard a sound, never saw anything. And blokes were, in fact, blokes were saying, bloody hell, a waste of time. We've dashed all this way and back, you know, and they were walking up with that. And we got over this crest. And what we didn't know, of course, I think this was just through the fact that he'd been in that much of a hurry. He hadn't been able to recce the area well. And it was a forest crest. There was a, you know. And when we got on the on this first crest, in the, you know, there was another sort of plateau and gullies and wadis, like little wadis, like leading up towards the crest, the pate. We got really bloody hammered. The, you know, we everything. I think there was bloody machine guns, mortars, you name it, getting strapped. Nothing. I can't remember being much. There was one or two aircraft kicking about, but. And we, as I say, we really, really in trouble because we were down in these wadis sort of style, a very low cactus, I remember, it was sort of fairly low. And God, if you put your head up above this cactus, that was it. Because absolutely withering fire coming across, the snipers really were sort of taking pot shots. And as I say, we were stuck in these wadis. And I remember we'd been there quite a while and nobody seemed to know what the hell was going on or doing, you know. There seemed to be no overall pattern where the hell, you know, what the hell we were supposed to do next, to be honest. And as I say, we laid there, you couldn't move anywhere for the fire. And I remember just in front of us was one of our platoons, a company of platoons. I think it must have been maybe 16th platoon, I don't know anyway. The Germans rounded them all up within about 20 yards in front of where we were. I was with the mortar, the 2-inch mortar man and his mate. And there was a few kicking around in front of, you know, sort of with company, with platoon HQ, you know, with the platoon HQ. And they rounded up every bugger in front, maybe about 20 yards in front of where we were.
How were they able to do that when they were so close to you?
Well, we just kept our heads down. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was the problem. I think
you couldn't intervene.
You couldn't do anything because if you stuck your head above the captain, you got the shot off. But it was absolute mayhem. We really got hammered. Anyway, when things calmed down a bit, things seemed to calm down a little bit, and somebody, I think it was one of the lieutenants, just shouted to lay low where we were until it was dark. I think it was a lieutenant called Duffy, if I remember. I'm almost sure it was this Lieutenant Duffy. And he shouted for us to lay low until it got dark. And we laid in the cactus. Because we didn't know how many more there were, of course, we had no idea. And we laid low in this cactus until it got dark. And then we were given the order to retire back down the hill. And we went back down the hill. And I think the initial count, if I remember rightly, the initial count when we got back was 12.
This is in your company, is it?
Yeah. There was a Sergeant Fordyce, I remember, wasn't in my company. He came back down and he was in really a bad way. He got a big bomb up, you know, he was
shell shock, was it?
He was really in a bad way. Well, he was shouting about losing so many men and his mates and all that sort of thing, you know. And as I said, the initial count was about 12. And then overnight they started straggling back in, but to all intents and purposes, that was about it, because they must have captured a hell of a lot of people in front of us. And then, of course, we started reforming then. We got...
Before we come to that next episode, can we go back onto that plateau, You'd just breasted it and got onto it when, obviously, the Germans seemed to be waiting for you.
Oh, they were just waiting, We were all sitting ducks, you know. We were all in, all the lads were in line abreast, port arms, you know, the usual...
First World War type of moving.
Just advancing in the open ground.
Do you remember the disposition of the companies as you went up the hill?
Almost all their company in front of us. And B company was on our right. And C come out, C company, and B company were further over. Well, that's as much as I remember of the disposition, to be honest, because...
Seems to have been a great lack of central control, hasn't it?
Oh, there didn't seem to be any really control, to be honest. We were just told to go forward, you know, keep going. And I remember one of the first lads that was killed, that I actually saw, I saw two or three, but anyway, one of the first was Broadhead, the sergeant major. And then there was a lad in another company. We sort of passed through them a little bit because they were starting to fall down, with a lad called Jeff Emerson, who was a sergeant in D Company. And he lived in Stannard, actually. He lived along Stannard, and I knew him very well because, we were sort of fairly low over Cook and Stannard when we joined up, when we met down in Shorncliffe. And the lad out of my company was a lad called Sergeant McDonough, and he was killed there. But it was, as I say, it was just pure bloody mayhem. There didn't seem to be any, for want of a better, there didn't seem to be any office, any leadership in the sense that the officers were doing a great deal of leading, as far as I was concerned, anyway.
What were you trying to do with your...
Well, I recall that when we went up the hill, the lads, it was funny really, well it wasn't funny really, in retrospect. The lads were all saying, well, no bugger here, what the hell, we've marched on this bloody way, and I'm trying to keep a big discipline going, saying, come on, get yourselves on, and all this sort of thing. And then, of course, suddenly, just out of the blue, when we go over this crest, and we all seemed to be on this sort of level plateau. They must have, thought they must have waited up, they saw the whites of our eyes, And we all just, the whole bloody lot of battalion seemed to be on this plateau when we got hammered, They just sort of, somebody must have just said, give them the bloody word, that was it. And of course, everybody went to ground and started crawling up into these bits of wadis in the cactus. And then, of course, as I say, things were happening that quickly, of course. Blokes were putting their heads up and getting shot. And I remember shouting to this mortar man to fire some rounds or forward, but you didn't know whether He didn't know where the hell he was firing them to. As I say, everything was a bit chaotic, to be honest.
Is there a lot of noise and shouting and screaming?
Oh, yes, sir. There wasn't a lot of shouting as between the lads. No, there wasn't. There wasn't a lot of that going on. But there was certainly plenty of bloody noise going on as far as the firing was concerned.
It's your responsibility not only to kind of look after yourself, but to look after the men of your platoon.
Oh, yeah.
And they were falling all around
you,
presumably.
I was in platoon HQ with a mortar man, and the three sections were in front. My three sections were in front of us. And that's why most of them got away lean, because, as I say, we were maybe the dividing line between what they thought was the lads with the fighting sort of sections, and the follow people. You know, I was sort of maybe, well, just 10 yards behind the last man in the section, but certainly. My sort of vivid recollection is that we were laid up in this little cactus and couldn't move for the heavy fire that was going on. And nobody seemed to know what the hell was happening. You know, there was no sort of, you didn't hear from other company runners what was going on, you know. And I lost touch with my company officer, so I didn't know what the hell happened. So I can remember this Duffy. Yeah, I think it was Lieutenant Duffy shouting for us to Leo until it was dark. And we laid up until it was dark. So it was all sort of, it was a bit obscure. Well, it was obscure because nobody knew what the hell was going on. And we were just stuck in this cactus. We seemed to be stuck in this cactus for 30 hours, you know.
And did you never get the opportunity to fire back or fire anyone?
No, I didn't. I didn't ever fire a bloody shot. There didn't seem to be any concerted, didn't seem to be any concerted fire at all. They seemed to scope all these blokes up in front because we were lined up in the cactus and we could hear them shouting, you know, in front.
Was it purely German infantry or did they have tanks?
German, no, just infantry.
About your own platoon officer, what had happened to him?
I've no idea. No idea.
So basically, it's been a very confused action.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. Maybe it was just lack of sort of. Couldn't have been. Maybe a lack of. Not training, but. The lack of acknowledgement of maybe real warfare. That was the first time we'd ever been in battle, of course, or seen any battles. And I think it was maybe just that we were green troops, you know, I think relatively green troops. I think we hadn't had any, we just had the fighting patrols and that sort of thing, and shelling. So we'd had a sort of maybe an easy baptism. Up to that time, and the first sort of real battle was in difficult conditions, you know, where we were stuck in really cactus with our heads down.
And you'd
so
been
maybe wasn't anything to be pretty proud of, but
you'd been flung in with very little preparation.
Oh, there was no preparation at all,
and then
it seemed to be. Bashed up, you know, we just bashed up this road, and we were told that the Germans had broken, so we were going to stop them, and we, you know, like the Joker York's men, marched up the bloody hill and marched down again.
And the lack of central control,
well,
because the senior officers weren't there.
No, there certainly was a sort of lack of control. We were just sort of, as I say, it was all just, just one hell of a mess, like, you know. But certainly I was more than surprised at the number of people that came back down. As I say, I think the initial count was about 12.
And stragglers made their way in during the night?
There was some sort of stragglers, and then, but there didn't seem to be a lot of people come back, to be honest. And then, you know, you've got all the rumours about all these blokes captured and all this sort of thing, you know. And then
you'd have a roll call, did you?
Oh yeah, they had a roll call, yeah.
And was that your job in your platoon?
Yeah. I think I just had about four men back.